Poorly Read.
Me, am I doing it?
Okay, I'll do it. Hi, and welcome to this week's Poorly Read. I'm Gifton.
And I'm Tom.
And we were trying to think of a tagline to like open up our podcast with.
Yeah, I came up with one that was not good enough.
I just thought it was a bit passé. So yeah, if you've got any suggestions of how we can open this up, email us from the future and let us know. And yeah, maybe it'll make it in.
Where can they email us, Gifton?
Oh, they can email us at our new web address, poorlyread@gmail.com.
Hey.
Follow us on Instagram at poorlyreadpod and on Twitter at poorlyreadpod. Where you'll find all the latest news and gossip and probably unsolicited nude pictures. Yeah.
Well, I would hope so. I mean, there's nothing on there yet, but that's what we're going to use it for, right?
Well, how else are we going to get famous?
Yeah. How else are we going to get our dick pics out to the world?
Okay, so this week we're going to be talking about, obviously, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, chapters 9, 10, 11, and 12.
Hey. So chapter 9 is The Midnight Duel. So how do we start? We start in the Great Hall. Neville gets a Remembrall.
Neville gets a Remembrall.
Yeah.
And I was very curious because I still don't know what a Remembrall actually does in terms of how it works.
Well, this was one of my notes as well.
Okay.
And sorry to start off with something like so pedantic. But you know, that's our format.
Oh, wait, that's what we built this whole podcast on.
So I put the Remembrall seems unnecessarily vague.
Yeah.
It's when you hold it, if you've forgotten something, it turns red.
What use is that?
We've all forgotten something.
Yeah, it just changes colour. Surely it'd be more useful if it showed you what exactly you've forgotten and where you've forgotten it.
That would be a lot more useful. And it seems like it wouldn't be beyond the realms of whoever created it to do that because... So everyone's forgotten something, right? I can't remember my own birth. I can't remember off the top of my head every like appointment I have, everything I'm doing for the next like month.
Yeah.
But I've written it all down.
Yeah.
So I haven't like forgotten it, but it's not in my head right now. So would it go red? Or it probably only turns red when you forget something that's like pertinent, relevant to what you're gonna do.
Yeah, I think that it's
day,
that.
Right?
Because I think there's a difference between things that you've forgotten. Like, okay, you've forgotten something you might have written down in your diary. Because you've written it down, it means that you can recall it. I think it's almost specifically used if you've left something somewhere or you've left something behind. But how is it even doing that?
Exactly. It seems like, fuck, it's so many variables and it have to be such a really quite, like, powerful piece of magic to make it do that.
Do you know, I think it's more like a mood ring. I reckon if your hand's hot and you touch it, it changes yeah. colour. Like, oh, I've forgotten something. It's a fucking joke gift.
It's a stupid thing. And so, yeah, and so it seems...
Maybe that's why it's so ingenious. He's like, I've literally just invented a ball full of coloured smoke that does fuck all.
Yeah, yeah. Or it's another possibility, which is it's one of many fun little things that appear in the Harry Potter world that when you scrutinise them even a little bit, completely fall apart and make no sense.
Okay, so not long after they get the Remembrall, they have their first flying lesson, mm-hmm. correct? My question was, just off the bat, is why does Madame Hooch have yellow eyes?
I thought that as well. yellow eyes like a hawk.
Yeah, and I was like, whoa. Is she... I don't think she is anything. She's just a human teacher, which is like a quirky... I think a lot of the things in this book are things that she'd written about before thinking that it was going to be a thing. So although she had like a grand plan, she was like, oh, this will be fun, but not really thinking, oh, but she's not part anything. So you wouldn't just have yellow eyes like a hawk.
Wizards' eye colour get infused with, like, magic at all?
Oh, that'd be
cool. Do any of them have other weird colours? Snape's eyes are black, I think she says at one point.
Yeah, I've always wondered if black eyes is a real thing in general, because people say that, don't they? And I'm like...
Or maybe she just meant he looked like he had the eyes of a black man.
Snape had the eyes of a black man. I could tell that he liked big booty. It's okay, I'm black too, don't get offended. Yeah, I think that was a bit of a weird description, but I did enjoy it. Yeah, so she tells them how to like summon their brooms, to put a hand over it and say up, which is something they don't do again in the series. So I was like, that's a bit odd, but okay.
True, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Hermione struggles. Harry gets it straight away, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Ron gets hit in the face.
Does he?
Yes. But I might just be remembering the movie.
Yeah. I don't remember Ron getting hit in the face, but I don't know. He might
have. That might be the movie. Yeah, because we're all like, up, up. And then Hermione in the film's like, up, up. And it's not working. I'm like, haha. Yeah, so Neville, he's...
Special needs. Isn't he?
He is a bit, isn't he? Like...
I mean, yeah.
His broom would have, like, you know, like, fun, like, plasters stuck on it and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he... What happened? He
accidentally
straddles his broom by accident, right?
Well, they've all straddled their brooms, and Madam Hooch is counting down, counting to three, and then on three they're supposed to like kick off, and he gets nervous and does it too early.
A pattern that he repeats throughout his life.
So
that exasperated sigh from Tom.
Neville gets nervous and goes off prematurely.
He does. He just gets it everywhere.
Yeah, falls off the thing and breaks his wrist. Hawkeye takes him off to the...
Why wasn't her name Madam Hawkeye? I suppose that's in the Avengers, though, isn't it? This was before that was a film.
I was about to say, I'm sure that's used somewhere.
Yeah. Okay, so my factoid is I went to college with the boy who was Neville's body double in that scene.
Really?
Yeah, so anything that's like slightly stunty in that scene... I was going to say friend. I've literally not spoken to him in like 10 years. Don't know where he is. I don't know if he's alive or not. Alan was his name. Yeah, he was his body double and he got paid $2,000 for that.
Wow.
I know. I think it was only like a day of shooting. Oh, mate. It makes you sick, doesn't it?
I'm in the wrong line of work.
Well, one of us is.
Which one?
Mate, I'm an actor, man.
Oh, shit, yeah. Yeah, yeah, but no, but are you a stuntman?
No. But it's a very deadly profession. They die all the time. Yeah, I mean, fucking hell, if Nicole Kidman looks at you too intensely, like... Pff,
game over.
Yeah. Your heart and your penis just gives out. What would your penis giving out look like?
Just wilting.
It would, wouldn't it? Just like, sort of like a... would come out of it. Just like turn like purple.
Like a horse braying. Yeah. All right, so Malfoy gets Neville's Remembrall off the ground, flies up into the sky... And just baits Harry so easily. I mean, he does. Malfoy flies up into the sky and just completely manipulates Harry into chasing him. And Harry just takes the bait instantly without hesitation.
I do kind of wonder why.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Just that challenge of if you want it, come and get it kind of thing. But I did say that it is kind of nice to see the characteristics of Slytherin and Gryffindor kind of being played out.
Yeah, that's true.
And then it happens, you know, later in the chapter with the duel challenge as well. But, you know, the Slytherin being all kind of cunning and scheming and setting the things up. And then he eventually throws it and gets Harry into trouble. And, and Harry just charges to the challenge hot-headedly and impulsively. And so it's kind of nice that, you know, those were laid out as the characteristics of Gryffindor and Slytherin, and that they weren't just kind of arbitrary. We are actually seeing that play out among the characters.
I guess so, yeah. I did put that Harry needs to chill. Like, it's just a it's just a novelty toy we've discovered.
Yeah, but then it's also like his rival being a dick and he wants to sort him out.
But he's like super, I guess this is why he's in Gryffindor. I was going to say, he's super brave. Because like, mind you, maybe, okay, I'm thinking of my rival in high school.
You had a rival?
I had two. And the weird thing is that we were rivals because we were all so similar, but just like... certain differences. And yeah, when I'm thinking back now, whenever they used to do something like douchey, yeah, it was always like a fight. Not a physical fight. I tried to fight one of them once and literally got laughed at. I remember him grabbing my wrist and going, "What are you doing?" And I was just like, "I'm sorry." But yeah, I feel like Harry should have just told a teacher, and then Malfoy would have actually got in trouble.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like he refuses to get anyone else involved.
Yeah, that's just Harry, isn't it? I suppose he's always had to look after himself, though, really. So it's...
I guess.
Oh, my God. To be fair, that explains so much. He's always had to depend on himself. So that's why everything is always like, no, I'll do it. It's got to be me.
Yeah.
Wow. My opinions of all these books have changed.
Yeah, he's never had an authority figure to go to before, so it's not his default position to get help from anywhere else.
But it makes you wonder, I guess in the past, he couldn't have had like these explosions of temper because he would have gotten real big trouble for them.
Yeah.
So maybe this is why it all sort of comes out when he's at Hogwarts, because he's been bottling up for so long.
Shit, I get me. Yeah, I mean, this is years of resentment for Dudley.
Yeah. Wow. I wonder if Malfoy and Dudley would have been friends.
Dudley would have probably been another one of Malfoy's, like, henchmen.
Oh, he so would have, yeah. Right, so Malfoy chucks the Remembrall. From what I can remember, it goes hurtling towards McGonagall's office. That also may be in the film.
I think so. I think she just... It
goes towards the classroom, though, for sure, because he does get seen out of a window.
Oh, I don't know. In the book, I think it just says it's hurtling towards the ground really quickly and he pulls into a big dive and...
Oh, yeah, he does like a Ronsky feint before we know that that's the term for it, right? So he grabs it. You're right. He goes, and then he catches it and then like pulls up super, super fast. And then McGonagall's like, Potter, come with me.
McGonagall's like,
Potter. So she not grabs him, but she marches him to whatever lesson Oliver Wood is in, right?
Yeah, and asks, you know, charms with Flitwick and says, can I borrow Wood for a second? And Harry thinks, is Wood.
And she just handed a plank. And she's like, Flitwick.
And they exchange little winks.
Oh my god, that's hilarious.
But yeah, Harry says, like, was Wood a cane she was going to use? And actually, to be honest, what we've seen of Hogwarts and their, like, the vibe and the sort of historical era that they're pitching themselves at, I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, there must be, like, a lashing spell. Whew, that'd be harsh.
Yeah.
I guess, like, Sectum Sempera is kind of a lashing spell.
It's a pretty fucking intense one, though.
Yeah.
Cuts, like, gouges in your skin.
Yeah.
And then, there's the thing that Umbridge uses, that quill that carves into your hand.
Oh, yeah. Just imagine, like, a bunch of, like, NEWT students are like, it said lashing spell. I thought I was going to get pissed. I didn't realize I was going to kill my friend.
I just wanted to get him lashed.
Oh, that's comedy for you. Okay, so...
Accidental murder. Something I was quite surprised about. When she's in the... She got Harry and Oliver Wood in the little office or whatever, and she's saying, Harry's going to be a new seeker, et cetera, et cetera. She says, oh, it's about time. You know, we need a new team. Better team than last year. I couldn't look Severus Snape in the face for weeks after the thing. And I just kind of thought, you know, her and Snape are, like, respected academics, heads of their houses, lots of shit going on. I'm surprised at how much stock they seem to put in Quidditch. Like, does it matter that much? Apparently it matters a lot. And why?
Well, one of my notes was McG fucking loves having that house cup.
Yeah.
So I think you've got to think as well, especially these teachers, they live in this school all year round. They've got no TV, a broken wireless. They're not sleeping with each other. Fucking hell. Who's McGonagall going to sleep with?
I don't know.
Maybe Flitwick.
Maybe her and Flitwick have got a little...
She is freakishly tall and he's real small.
I think they've got a little thing set up in one of Snape's dungeons.
Yeah, he can get into tight places.
Because she gives a little hint as to her nature in this scene. She says, I want to hear your training hard, Potter, or I might change my mind about punishing you. And that, even in Stephen Fry's voice... It got me all riled up.
Oh no, she's gonna lash me. I just imagine like a ball gag in like Potter world looks like a snitch. Maybe like the ball is the snitch, I mean the wings are the straps. Yeah.
Quidditch themed session.
Oh yeah. It's like, hey, you're gonna win that house cup, Potter. Yes you are. It just gushes everywhere.
Jesus Christ.
She's like, Aguamente. A question I have, so they're talking about after that, they're like, wow, Harry, you're the youngest seeker in. And then he's like, yeah, like 100 years. And then I was like, why can't first years play?
That is also a note that I had, because she breaks the rule readily enough when she sees how good Harry is. Mm. So it's like, first years can't have their own brooms and they can't play on the team, asterisk, unless they're really, really good.
Yeah.
But it's like, you have to be pretty fucking good to get on the team anyway.
Right.
And so why not just be like, well, I mean, it's unlikely that a first year will get on because it's unlikely they'll be good enough.
I could only imagine it was a health and safety thing. So I do think that they should maybe have just had it that no one under fifth year can join, because by that point they're a bit older. So if they're going to, they more have a better understanding of getting hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you have a good understanding of what pain feels like at like 11, but I feel like you might get involved in a sport and not really realise exactly how difficult it is. And I get the feeling that it's not that easy to quit, and you don't want to let your team down or your house down.
Not so easy to quit.
Yeah. Because
once you get that Quidditch high, nothing that can
Man,
compare.
Man, I try, but now all I can think about is flying balls. So just quickly, I did think, why didn't Harry go into Quidditch after Hogwarts? Like, he was so good at it. I'm surprised he didn't want to become a professional Quidditch player.
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, he wanted to be an Auror.
An Auror. Okay, so Malfoy challenges Potter to a wizard's duel.
Yeah.
And Ron says, yeah, so outside of school, a wizard's duel is to the death. Shami wonders, so are wizard's duels outside of school, are they still legal?
I mean, probably not.
I mean, you'd imagine so, right? But maybe it's like a caveat where you're like, oh, I really want to kill this guy.
Yeah, like, how did Jeff die? Yeah. It seems mysterious. Oh, it was in a duel. Okay, yeah. Well. Well, the thing I had about duels is that, I mean, first of all, it's a fucking stupid thing to accept right after he's just got off the hook for breaking rules, which Hermione later points out, and I think good point, Hermione. Although Ron does basically like accept it for him. Harry doesn't actually have much.
Yeah, so true.
Doesn't say much. And Ron says, I'm his second. Like, that's a thing.
Yeah.
And Malfoy chooses his second. And why is that a thing? Because Ron says they're there to take over if the first wizard dies. If the first wizard dies, the duel is over. The dead wizard has lost. The other guy won.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe it's like if Harry gets tired, he's like, oh, my wrist has gone all limp. Ron,
yeah, but Ron says usually they're there for in case the first wizard dies. That doesn't make any sense. The duel's to the death. The duel's
over.
Yeah,
that is bizarre. I mean, maybe Ron just made it up so he can just get in on the duel.
Maybe. But Malfoy knows what a second is.
Oh,
he just goes along with it. And he sizes up Crabbe and Goyle and then chooses Crabbe.
Hmm.
I just think, like, imagine being Goyle.
I mean, being either of them would be most unfortunate.
It would be. Like, but particularly, like, you've just, you're 11 years old. You've just got to...
Oh, I guess, like, I know he's going to be his best man then.
Yeah. Yeah. You've just started at wizarding school and you're basically a henchman. You've been roped into being this little snotty little shit's like bodyguard, basically.
Yeah.
And not only that, it hasn't been discussed yet, you know, who's number one, who's number two. But now it's very clear that you're number two.
He chooses Crabbe, right? Crabbe the larger one?
Yeah.
So maybe he can obviously see why. He's like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, but what are they there for other than being large?
I mean, if you've got two large friends and one of them's larger than the other and you're going to like a knife fight, you're probably going to bring the one that's slightly larger, right?
Yeah, totally. But I still think maybe I'm sympathising too much with Goyle. He literally hasn't had a line in the dialogue yet, I don't think.
I mean, he's the only one who made it to like the end of all seven films, so...
Well, out of Crabbe and Goyle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So less sympathy, more hatred.
Okay. Okay, yeah, sorry.
That's my new party slogan. So Neville comes back from the hospital wing a bit later that night as the other three, it turns out, are heading towards the wizard's duel, and he's been healed up. And I just wondered, just curiously, if any wizard healers work at Muggle hospitals and do like sly healing on the side.
You know, I mean, I think they should if they don't.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that the wizarding world exists in parallel with the Muggle world and they interact with Muggles all the time and wizards are very aware of the Muggle world,
mm-hmm.
The fact that they are so segregated to the point where they haven't heard of, you know,
Spice Girls,
and all the sports we play, and just don't know anything even about the money, and like the fact that they're just completely segregate themselves, and that must be a choice.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a choice to keep it a secret from them, but it's also a choice to remain completely ignorant of their society, even with the ways that the wizarding world could potentially help the Muggle world, and things that they could, you know, adopt from the Muggle world into their own world. The extremeness of the segregation seems like really weird and sort of problematic in some ways.
Yeah, because I don't think most wizards live exclusively amongst other wizards in terms of where their houses are and things like that. I think the Weasleys are quite an exception to that.
Mm.
So I'm curious as well.
Yeah, I guess there's only like a few wizarding settlements.
Well, yeah, like Godric's Hollow was.
Yeah.
And where the burrow is, there's that and the Lovegood house. But Snape, for instance, he lives in Spinner's End, and that's just in like a Muggle town, I guess. It's very rainy. I do remember that.
From your time you spent there.
Yeah, I mean, thank God I bought my wellies. Does anyone own a pair of wellies? Because I think I really want a pair.
I don't. I never. Oh, I haven't since I was a kid.
Yeah.
My shoes just get wet.
I might get some bright yellow ones and get a yellow raincoat and hold a red balloon. Oh god.
My next note is Hermione is being totally reasonable in her objections. They are being totally selfish. She might be a bitch, but she's right.
Yeah, I agree. I get a feeling that if a boy had said this to them, that they would have probably taken heed.
Maybe.
I get the feeling that because they see her as like a know-it-all girl, they're like, oh, Hermione.
Yeah, they just dismiss her.
I think if Neville had been like, guys, don't, they might have been like, oh, but we said we would. And if he was like, no, don't. Like,
maybe okay. Not Neville. Maybe not Neville. Maybe if Dean or Seamus.
Yeah, someone cool.
Yeah.
With sunglasses on. Like, hey, guys. Why don't you be cool and stay in school?
Yeah, be cool like me. Don't go wandering the corridors after dark. And they're American suddenly. Because all the cool people are American.
They are, though. Have you not seen the 80s?
Yeah.
Right, so they go to the Wizard's Jewel, but Malfoy has tried to set a trap for them, if I'm correct.
Yeah, he's just told Filch that they're going to be there. Which, again, this is, you know, the Slytherin cunning versus the Gryffindor impulsiveness.
Yeah, so they make a quick getaway, and then they come across a locked door.
Well, firstly, they run into Peeves.
That's it.
And, like, I actually quite like Peeves' interaction with them. I mean, I'd fuck with them as well.
They should have at that point been like, look, what can we give you to make you be on our side?
Yeah.
For now and always.
But no, they just go, grr!
Yeah, and like, Peeves, no.
Yeah, and just swipe at him. Then they find a locked door. Hermione.
Locked, with quotation marks.
We went over this last week, but Hermione uses Alohomora, gets them through the door. And then through the door, they hear Filch catch up to Peeves, and then Peeves doesn't help Filch either. He just fucks with him as well, which I like. Yeah. I'm on Peeves' team at the moment.
Yeah, I like that Peeves' is team Peeves. He's not, like, he's got no alliances.
Yeah, he just messes with everyone. Yeah. I like it. And then, they turn around and are confronted with a massive fucking Cerberus.
Yeah, not very safe to have that in a school.
No, and Ron says later on, well, when they get back to the dormitory, what do they think they're doing keeping a thing like that locked up in a school? Good question, Ron.
One of my notes was, why didn't they just have extra magical protection on that entire corridor?
Yeah.
Dumbledore should have put like a no entry barrier thing on it or something. That would have been best for everyone.
I agree.
Do you know what? I can only assume that Dumbledore left it all up to the other teachers and was like, look, I'll handle the final charm, the one that's the most flashy. You guys take care of everything else because I trust you.
Yeah.
So if he should have just taken care of everything, fucking Dumbledore. Okay, right. So now we're on to chapter 10.
Hang on. Just before we do, one last thing.
Go on.
When they see Fluffy run out of the door, they don't lock that door again.
Oh, shit.
The next unwitting student that accidentally opens that door is fucked.
And it's man, I'm covered in meat juice. Yeah. I'll just go wash it up. Anyway, right. Chapter 10?
Yeah, chapter 10. Halloween. So Halloween and Christmas are both things that the Wizarding World celebrates. So they must have shared traditions with the Muggle world at some point.
Well, I mean, they're both pagan holidays.
I guess.
Yeah, because I reckon that they started to transfer before the Statute of Secrecy was implemented.
That's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, wait, was that a question or a statement?
It's a question.
What, the Statute of Secrecy?
Yeah.
Well, have you not? Do you not know this? Have you not read the books?
Well, no, I know that they keep the.
Okay, so this is a podcast about Harry Potter.
I know that
do you even go here?
I know that they keep the Wizarding World secret from the Muggles, and that it is, you know, law at the moment. But I didn't know the name of the bill and when it was.
Yeah, so it was signed in like 15 something or other, and it's the International Statute of Secrecy, and it was basically that it was getting problematic, getting wizards to do. Oh, just trying to like coexist. Obviously, there was like the witch trials and things like that. Witch trials came after that, sorry. But obviously, the presence of witches, it took a while for the fact to die out. But yeah, they had to basically just all go into hiding because they realized what a threat it was to them. I think because in every country, there wizards are always a minority and quite a small minority. So even though they've got magic, there's only so much that you can do to protect yourself and others, I think. And I think it was just getting too problematic. So they were like, we need to go into hiding. And so they did. And now they live peacefully, I guess.
Yeah, save for the occasional Dark Lord, but yeah.
I think it is Grindelwald wanted to like reverse that, didn't he?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so they open the chapter by saying that Harry and Ron, the next day, thought that meeting that dog had been an excellent adventure and were keen for another one.
They're such fucking adrenaline junkies.
I know. My reaction to that is just like the face palm emoji. You know?
Yeah, so they're in the Great Hall now and owls come, right?
They do. This is also my next point.
One has a very large package.
Yeah.
And he's also carrying something.
Yeah.
And he delivers Harry a brand new broom.
Yeah, and I thought McGonagall wanted to keep it a secret. I mean, she does include a note with it to say don't tell anyone, but if she really wanted to keep it a secret, there's more secretive ways of getting it to him than having a massive broom-shaped parcel delivered to him at breakfast.
I reckon she originally wanted to keep it a secret, and she wrote that note, and then Snape said something shitty to her, like the day before.
Ah.
So she was like, you know what? I bet she already had it like in her room waiting to present to Harry on the sly. And then she's like, that fucking cunt. So she got her post out, tied it, sent it out of the castle, and then it just flew right back in into the Great Hall. And then she just wanted to see Snape's face. It's like, yeah, Dumbledore let me buy that with the school's money.
Yeah.
With the great fund we have.
All right, I'll get on board with that. Anyway, there's a nice moment where Malfoy gets egg on his face when he's giving Harry shit for having a broom and he's not supposed to have a broom, and then Flitwick comes along.
Yeah, I did like that.
I've heard about this, which is nice, even though I don't feel like I'm really like 100% on Harry and Ron's team at the moment.
Why?
But I'm certainly not on Malfoy's.
Well, just because you still don't think he should be on the Quidditch team?
Nah, just because they're running around breaking rules.
Running around breaking rules, being taking reprobates, names.
Kind of being dicks to Hermione still, even though her objections are perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, I think it's that thing like, you got to try and remember what it was like to be an 11-year-old boy.
Yeah, that's it. I'm very much looking at it through the guise of an adult with a relatively intact sense of empathy.
Yeah, and I just don't think... I mean... Things I said and did at that age was like despicable, some of it. So I can't hold it against them.
Yeah, I suppose.
And she's been fucking annoying. So after that, Wood takes Harry outside to sort of give him the rundown of Quidditch, because obviously Harry knows almost nothing about it. So Wood shows him his balls.
Quaffle is a fantastic word.
He gets to showing him the bludgers, and I did think to myself, why are the bludgers even a part of this game? It's a real unnecessary element of pain that is just introduced into this perfectly good game. And it's like, why? I mean, you could have them if they were soft balls and the beaters would just hurl them at other, a bit like dodgeball.
I suppose, but in order for that to have any impact, you'd have to throw them hard enough to actually like knock people off course.
Yeah, but I mean, you could do that.
Oh, you could do it. I mean, it wouldn't be any less dangerous than the bludgers are at the moment, though, I think
I'd rather like it be controlled by an actual person than this, like, because they're like bowling balls. Like, oh my god, just I'm thinking about it now, the idea of a self-possessed bowling ball flying through the air at me. Oh my god, I would never play this game again after my first interaction with one, I think. Because people get really fucking hurt.
Yeah.
Like, they get their bones and noses broken. So I did think that was...
Their bones and noses.
Bones and noses. My new grime band.
Bones and noses.
that's actually pretty dope. Highway Bones and Noses. No, it's not. Anyway. So yeah, I did think, oh, that's a bit, I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
And he talks about the three-month game. There was a three-month game of Quidditch that, like, they have to substitute players to finish it. And I was like, Jesus Christ, just have a time limit. And if no one's caught with Snitch by 90 minutes, then whoever has the most points wins.
Yeah. I mean, there needs to be something that gives value to the points that they score. Because I know we won't spend too much time talking about this because it's obviously fucking obvious why the rules of the sport are completely broken and make no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
The 150 points thing. I mean, I know the Bulgaria Island match in book four, but I think she just put that in there to be like, see, it does happen sometimes.
Yeah, I do agree.
It makes no sense.
Because, I mean, okay, the main hoop in Quidditch is worth 20 points, right?
Oh, he doesn't say that. It just says...
Oh, I think it's 20 and then 10 and 10 or 20 and 5 and 5.
Well, in the book, she just says you put the quaffle through a hoop and it's 10 points.
Huh. Maybe the main one is 10 then and then the side ones are 5.
They
definitely don't all have equivalent value.
Well...
It's definitely lower points on the smaller rings and then the big ring is bigger points.
That makes no sense. It should be the other way around.
No, but the keeper's usually in front of the middle one, so that's why it's got bigger points, I think.
But that's not said at this point in the book anyway.
Oh, is it not?
No.
Okay. I was just trying to figure out how long it would take you to get 150 points if you're playing the game.
Well, it's 15 goals. A difference of 15 goals is a big difference.
Yeah.
And, like, if the keeper catches the snitch, then it's all just... The whole rest of the game is just... Anyway, yeah, everyone knows this. So we're just going over stuff. They practice 3 times a week. Seems a lot.
What else are they doing?
Fucking, I don't know.
It's either homework or Quidditch or furious masturbation.
That's
true. There's nothing in between.
But they share dormitories.
Yeah.
So the furious masturbation time's pretty limited.
Well, they've got curtains around their bed.
Oh, that's... Maybe that, yeah. That's got to be why, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
These are all developing young people. Lots of hormones flying around.
You just gotta be like super quiet. You just hear like from like Neville's side of the room, like, "Are you all right, Neville?"
Yeah, I'm fine.
Scourgio. That's the cleaning.
Okay, yeah, I thought so. Anyway. Okay, so Oliver Wood, when Harry when he says put the quaffle through the hoops, Harry says like basketball. Wood says, what's basketball? Then later, a few sentences later, proceeds to get out a bag of, quote, ordinary golf balls.
That makes no sense.
Right?
Why would you know about golf and not basketball?
Yeah.
Maybe, okay, are they definitely golf balls and not just look like golf balls?
Well, maybe. But she says they were practicing, he got out a bag of, quote, ordinary golf balls.
Yeah, that makes no sense at all.
Nope.
Surely you would just get out a bag of, like, I don't know, just rocks, I guess.
Tennis balls. But no, something. Deactivated snitches, if that's a thing.
I don't think that's a thing.
No.
Even though, why wouldn't it be?
Cut their wings off.
Yeah. Oh. That poor thing. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, that's just some more ridiculousness. Okay,
yeah.
So after that, they end up in Charms, right?
Classic Wingardium Leviosa lesson.
I did love how sort of iconic this scene is.
It is, yeah.
It's what everyone thinks of, I think, when they think of Hermione.
Yeah.
Although I can never remember, even after listening to it, I can't remember the way around you're supposed to say it.
It's Leviosa, not Leviosa.
That's it. Well, I guess it wasn't that hard to remember.
And so while teaching them the Wingardium Leviosa charm, Professor Flitwick says, flick your wand in the right way, and also be careful when you're saying the incantation. He said, remember, Wizard Baruffio said S instead of F and found himself on the floor with a buffalo on his chest. And I was like, okay, there's no F in Wingardium Leviosa.
Wait, no, are you sure he didn't say he said F instead of S?
I don't think so. I listened to it pretty carefully. But he could just be talking about incantations in general.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's just like a generalized cautionary tale.
Yeah.
I did think a buffalo on your chest would kill you.
Yeah.
Like, straight away.
Yeah, maybe it did.
Maybe it did. Maybe that's why it's extremely cautionary.
Yeah.
Like, guys, he died. Magic's not all fun and games.
Yeah.
All right, so, Ron So they leave class, and what does Ron say exactly? Well, I should have written this down.
They were paired up.
That's
Ron and Hermione were paired up. Ron struggles. Hermione does it, and she's all know it all about it. And then Ron says, "Oh, you know, she's a nightmare. No wonder nobody nobody can stand her." Yeah.
No, he says, "No wonder she hasn't got any friends."
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And then she storms past him, and then Harry's like, "Oh, I think she heard you." And then Ron says something like, "I don't care," or something like that. And I was like, "Ron, you're a G."
well, yeah, but he does flush a little
bit.
Yeah,
there's that. It was, yeah, there's that sort of hint of like, oh, maybe that was a bit shitty.
Yeah.
But I respect him for saying the first part. I was like, a man who, yeah, stands with his convictions. Right, so they go to Great Hall for dinner, for din-dins, and they say, oh, where's Hermione, to one of the others. I think it's to Lavender Brown, isn't it? Or Parvati.
It's to one of the miscellaneous side characters.
Yeah, to one of the side chicks. And they say, oh, she's in the toilets crying. And they both feel bad because they're like, oh.
Yeah. They don't say which toilet.
I don't think that's an important point, though.
Well, not really.
Because they go to... Because the troll just... When we get there. Okay, we'll get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Quirrell comes running into the hall and he's like, there's a troll in the dungeon. I thought you ought to know. Yeah, I always think of the film bit
when that happens.
Like, troll in the dungeon. Thought you ought to know. Pass out. And they all start running from the hall. Now Dumbledore, like, they all start going, ah, and then Dumbledore's like, quiet or silence, whatever he says. And he goes, everyone go back to your dorms. He'll go, and then Ron and Harry are like, shit, Hermione doesn't know about the troll. She's in the bathroom still. So they do go and look for the bathroom that she's in, but they just happen to find exactly the right one straight away. I did think there must be like tons of bathrooms in this place. How would you even know?
But they don't know what room it is at first.
Oh, so they just happen to be in that corridor.
Yeah, the troll just goes in there and they notice that there's a key in the door. And so they go and lock the troll in, and then they realize, shit, that's the girl's bathroom. My point was, why is there a key in the lock to the girl's bathroom on the outside?
Yeah, that is peculiar, isn't it?
Kids are going to lock the girls in there. I would. Be hilarious.
Yes, keep them fresh for later. Yeah, that is odd. And how did she get the key?
Well, I feel like the key was just in there.
Always in
the lock.
The key
just lives in there because...
Wait, was this bathroom on the forbidden corridor?
Well, it doesn't say where it was.
Oh. Yeah, that's bizarre.
It is bizarre. It's almost like it's just there to serve the plot.
You'd almost think this was a book. Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, so they panic that they've locked the troll in the, because they hear a scream from inside, and then they're like, oh crap, that's the girl's bathroom, Hermione's in there. So they run in, unlock the door, and then have a showdown with the troll.
Yeah. I did admire their courage in this.
Yeah.
I do also think it's something that most people would do. Like, if your friend was in the loo and a troll was attacking it, I don't think many people would just run straight away. You would try and help, especially if you've got magic. So you don't have to, like, run up and try and fight it. You can just fight from a distance. Yeah, and then Harry jumps on its back.
Yep.
Stuffs his wand up the troll's nose.
Yeah.
I did think that was so unnecessarily, like... Oh, that must have hurt so bad.
Yeah.
And so that made me uncomfortable. That hurt my feelings. And then Ron, the only spell we can think of is Wingardium Leviosa.
Yeah.
And he does it, and the club floats and falls on the troll's head.
It does.
And knocks it out.
And a thing that, again, like, triggered my writing brain, just there's, again, a sudden viewpoint shift to Ron when he casts the spell. But I don't know if that's an interesting enough point to keep in the final podcast, really.
Well, I did notice another one of those in the Quidditch game.
They're all over the place in the Quidditch game. They go back and forth from, like, sentence to sentence.
I mean, you know, it's her prerogative, I guess. You know what? Let's make a whole podcast talking about viewpoints.
Yeah.
So the teachers come, not in the nick of time.
No.
And they're all like, fucking hell. And then we're going to... and then McGonagall's like,
fucking hell, McGonagall said.
She didn't say it, she was certainly thinking it. And then she's like, what is going on? And then Hermione's like, I heard that the troll would come in here, so I came to take care of it myself, and the boys came and rescued me. And straight away I thought, your lie is more ridiculous and like condemning than the actual truth. You could have just said, I was really upset, so I came to the toilet to fix myself. The troll came in, the boys came to find me because they knew I was missing.
That's so true. You know, that's a much better...
Yeah, like... And then McGonagall would have been like, oh my God, okay. Because it was no one's fault. She wasn't doing anything wrong. She was just in the toilet.
Yeah.
So I was just like, why would you do this? And I could only think she was just trying to save face. She was that ashamed of crying.
Maybe, yeah.
But I mean, she is a Gryffindor. That's a very Gryffindor thing to do.
Yeah, and I think there has to be, just for the sake of the story, there had to be a reciprocal element in that they saved her, she saved them.
But I think that her story would have been more, the truth would have been more, like, more savvy, because she's admitting her own, like, she's admitting her own fault in it, and say, even though it wasn't her fault, but she's saying, look, I'm responsible, these boys did nothing but try and save me.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that would have been more like, oh, you've taken responsibility for this, even though it's not your fault, really. I respect that. But, yeah, so her, like, lie ends up costing them 5 points.
It's true.
And then she gives Harry and Ron 5 points each.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's it. You literally saved a girl from being killed by a troll and you give them 5 points. That's the same amount you get for like passing Professor Sprout a pot in herbology class, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't seem a lot, does it? And I swear, as the books go on, the point penalties and rewards fluctuate loads.
I think she gets a better grasp of them for sure.
Yeah.
Like, but I was just like, that's all you gave them. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That should have been at least like 30 points each, I think. In fact, she should have just given them the house cup. Just smashed the glass. Yeah, boy. take this.
In front of Snape, who's also there.
Yeah, here's a Sharpie. Write your name on it.
Yeah. But yeah, Hermione's lie does sort of betray her, I guess, Gryffindor nature, because it's quite an impulsive thing to do. Wasn't necessarily all that well thought out. She just kind of did it.
Yeah, I do agree.
Because up till now, it hasn't been entirely clear what makes her Gryffindor-y. She's very Ravenclaw.
Yes, I do agree with that. I guess something had to happen for us to think, I guess she does belong in Gryffindor.
Yeah.
But it shows you that you can be in any house, really.
Yeah, suppose so. Just fucking ask.
Yeah. What house do you want to be in? I don't know. All right, well,
Hufflepuff,
go home.
Then.
Okay, I can see that you care about nothing. Hufflepuff!
Yeah, I can see that you have no defining characteristics, so you will be one of the miscellaneous.
I put that I love how they became friends.
Yeah.
It's all so innocent.
Now they're all friends, and that's very nice.
And it's such a, that is such like a childlike thing that does happen, like you go through something. And I love that she wrote, how does she word it? There are some things that you go through where afterwards you just can't help becoming friends or being friends.
Yeah, and it turns out killing a troll is one of them or something. Yeah.
I do think if Hermione was an absolute nightmare, though, would they have stayed friends regardless?
Well, I think they start seeing her value after that, as in, like, they can just pry information out of her and copy her homework and stuff.
Shit, son. That's so dark.
I know, but that's what they do.
One thing I did think at this point was, even though we know what they talk about, what do they all talk about with Hermione? Because I can understand what two, like, 11-year-old boys would talk about, but...
Boobs.
Oh, boobs and Hot Wheels.
Yeah.
Yes, but then I thought, what would Hermione be talking about with them?
I don't think Hermione ever talks about anything except homework and, you know, academic stuff.
Yeah. She is muggle-born, so maybe that's how her and Harry connect.
Yeah.
She's like, oh my God, Harry, do you remember that thing?
Do you remember teletext and CFAX?
It's not even do you remember. It'd be like, oh yeah, I wish I could still access my CFAX.
Yeah, I wish I still had access to all the technology I had before I moved to this advanced, like, before I moved into this magical world.
It's 1991, right? So what was cool in 1991?
I don't know, mate. I was like two.
Same. Well, The Little Mermaid had come out 2 years before. She definitely would have watched that.
It was The Little Mermaid, 1989.
Yeah.
Christ.
Start of the Disney Renaissance.
Cool. All right, well...
Cool. So let's talk about Disney for 10 more minutes. So, my favourite Disney princess is...
Yes.
No, you've got to try and guess. That's up to our listeners. Email in with who you think my favourite Disney princess is. I'll give you a clue. She sleeps a lot. Anyway, right. So, chapter 11...
Chapter 11, Quidditch. So yeah, Harry's all nervous.
Have you said anything about the fire?
No.
Okay, so they're all outside. It's cold. They're by a tree, I think. And they're reading through Quidditch Through the Ages. And Hermione's conjured a fire in a jar, which I thought, that's pretty swish.
Yeah.
And then they're like, they didn't know if it'd be allowed. And I was like, why? I mean, it's just a spell. Why wouldn't you be allowed to do the magic here?
That's true.
So I thought that was very odd.
It is strange. But then Snape apparently just makes up his own rules because he confiscates the book with a rule they've never heard before.
I only think he said that because it was a Quidditch book. I reckon if it was like, I don't know, mushrooms and their psychedelic properties, he'd be like, fair dues, Potter.
Fair dues, Potter.
I see you're planning a party.
I see you're planning a party.
That was pretty good.
May I attend?
All I really want is acceptance.
All I really want is acceptance and a goodie bag.
a piece of cake if there is some.
A piece of cake and maybe a kazoo.
Snape will never not be Alan Rickman.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what's so weird? Even though she very clearly says that Snape has oily black hair, before the films, I envisioned Snape as bald.
Really?
Yeah, and I no idea why. My kid brain must have just skipped over a bit of the description.
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
So I never had that because I saw the first two films before I read any of the books. Everyone who was in the film already, I'd already pictured them as that.
Right. Now, I read the books. Well, however many of the books were out at the time, and then got really excited and thought, I bet they're going to make a film out of this.
Yeah.
And Googled to see if they were, and they were, and they were casting at that time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you told me this.
Yeah. And I was like, asked my mum if I could send in they wanted a video audition for Harry Potter. It's like, because I literally fit the exact description of Harry in the book, down to the eye colour, down to the uncontrollable curly, like, black hair. And she was like, yeah, but we didn't have a video camera, and nor did anyone that we knew. We had no way of recording a video of me, so I just didn't. Which is weird to think now.
Yeah, because you would just get out your phone.
Yeah, we all carry them around in our pockets.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
You never could have fathomed that 20 years ago.
No.
That's how long ago it was, almost. Well, they must have started putting things into production, like, late 1999, I reckon. Because it came out 2001, I think. Fuck. God, we're so old. Oh, well, I'm sorry you didn't get the part.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Radcliffe. Would have been Radcliffe anyway. Because he looks exactly like the illustration of Harry Potter on the front of the Philosopher's Stone. But that illustration and Radcliffe's casting always kind of annoyed me because that illustration and Daniel Radcliffe have perfectly straight hair.
That's so true.
And I was always like, yeah, I can't control my jet black hair. I'm Harry Potter.
Bang on the window. I'm Harry Potter.
Yeah. Excuse me. Have you read the description in the book? Snape takes Harry's book, Quidditch Through the Ages, saying you're not allowed to take library books outside of the library. Whatever, Snape, you petty motherfucker. I feel like I've skipped a little bit here, but a little bit after that, Harry decides to try and go and get... He decides that he will have better luck asking for his book back if he asks Snape for it in front of other teachers.
Mm.
So he goes to the staff room, knocks on the door, no answer. Knocks on the door again, no answer. Then opens the door and sees Snape with his robes up over his leg, robes revealing his leg when it's all bloody and chewed up and Filch is doing whatever, I don't know, bandage play they're into. And my thought was, well, okay, they're in there having this intimate moment. And Snape says, how are you supposed to keep your eye on all three heads at the same time, making it obvious how he got the wound. And my thought was, they're in the staff room.
Yeah.
Why did they not answer the door? Harry knocked at the door twice.
I mean, to be fair, if I was getting my leg bandaged and someone was knocking at the door, I would either say go away or I would just ignore it in the hopes that they did go away because he obviously didn't want anyone in there.
Yeah, I guess so.
Plus, maybe the staff room is that big that when Harry knocked it, you couldn't really hear it.
Maybe. There must have been a reason that they couldn't hear it, but it just seemed weird.
Well, I mean, if they were in like the throes of passion, I doubt they would have heard anything. You know, Filch is bandaging the leg with one hand, milking him with the other. Snape's just like...
Oh, this feels so much better.
Then Harry just barges in and he's like, oh my God, can you just knock? And he's like, oh, I did.
On some level, I think I wanted to be caught. Okay, so, well, my next note kind of skips forward to the Quidditch match. You got anything before that?
No, I have a note that I thought said Lee Jordan is Hitler, but it says Hilaire. Oh, they're one and the same, right?
Hitler was Hilaire.
So Hilaire. Have you ever seen his paintings? Oh, my God. I don't find the Holocaust funny, guys. I just want to say that just so they know, Tom, okay? My greatest fear is being misunderstood. So they started Quidditch.
Yeah, Hagrid arrives in the stands to join Ron and Hermione.
Yay, Hagrid's here.
If I saw him coming, I would have been like, oh.
Yeah, I know. I think they must have been on some level.
Yeah, like, oh, sorry, I've got to go. My toad is on fire. He's like, oh, I'll come with you then. I like seeing toads on fire.
Yeah. Hagrid would have some animal remedy, I mean.
He creates the malady just so he can give the remedy.
Whoa.
He's got the poison. He's got the remedy. Yay! I did say that moment where he comes in, that's another moment that Harry is not, he's not privy to it. It's a whole scene that takes place completely independent of Harry.
Yeah.
Which was, now that you've sort of mentioned those kind of things, I was aware of it. So I was like, huh, that's weird.
And the viewpoint, when it's not on Harry's viewpoint on his broom, it doesn't seem to be focused on anyone in particular. It jumps around describing how different people are feeling and what different people are seeing.
Yeah.
Which is characteristic of an omniscient viewpoint narrative, which I feel like the book isn't supposed to be, but then maybe I'm just being too much of a wanker about it.
I do wonder if she repeats it in later books.
Yeah.
I mean, like, accidentally repeats it. That would be something that I'll be, like, conscious of now, I think.
Yeah.
Be thinking, huh, so... Because usually, even if something is not to do with Harry, it's within his earshot. So it's like you're still, like you said, seeing it through his, like, prism. Whereas this completely isn't. And I'm like, huh, that's a bit jarring now.
Yeah. But I suppose it's, I guess, kind of necessary in this scene because of the whole, you know, we all know what's happening. They look over and see Snape looking up at Harry, who's juddering around on his broom. And they think that Snape is performing some kind of curse on him. And so Hermione runs around the stand.
Now, hold on. Before that, Hagrid says, nothing can interfere with a broomstick but powerful dark magic.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? What? So nothing can interfere with a broomstick except an explicitly stated powerful dark magic. Why? It's a broom.
Yeah, but they've got to be quite powerful magical artifacts.
Yeah, but they're not like ancient rooms from like some sort of relic. They're just made in a shop and then given like some enchantments and that's it. I just thought that was so bizarre that like Hermione's like, oh, there's something wrong with the broom. And straight away Hagrid's like, oh, but nothing can interfere with a broomstick. Nothing but powerful dark magic. And it's like, oh, well, surely just, oh yeah, something is interfering with the broomstick. Probably a spell.
Shocker.
Yeah. Oh, really? I guess we are in magic school. It's like, oh, that just irked me a little bit.
Yeah, I know what you mean, actually. Didn't occur to me at the time, but on board.
Good. I'm glad to know you got my back.
So Hermione runs round, doesn't stop to apologise as she nudges Professor Quirrell and he goes toppling down over the stands. That'll become relevant later.
Arse over tit.
I believe was the phrase. So she uses her little blue fire,
yeah,
sets fire to Snape's robes, and then maybe 30 seconds passed before Snape notices he was on fire. And only once Snape's concentration breaks is Harry able to regain control of his broom, which is a little bit inconsistent given what we know about that situation now, but
yeah,
meh.
Surely it would have just been fine once
she knocked Quirrell over.
Think about it like this. If Quirrell was doing like a shaky broom spell and then Snape was doing a counter shaky broom spell, so they're both spells that create like a motion.
Yeah.
So once Quirrell had given up, if Snape was still going on, the stabilizing of the broom from his end might have just been like he is doing the shaking of the broom now.
Yeah, maybe that's what happened. Let's say that's what happened.
That's precisely what happened.
And then...
so
then Snape's concentration is broken because he notices he's on fire. Turns around with a little yelp or whatever. And then once Snape has noticed, Hermione scoops the fire off him back into a jar. How the fuck did Snape, after having noticed he is on fire, not notice that fire being scooped off of him?
That is bizarre, isn't it?
What?
You would see her little hand going,
yeah,
like... and putting it back in the jar.
She didn't even need to do that. Yeah. Snape was perfectly capable of putting out a small fire on his cloak.
Maybe she felt bad. Maybe she's seen too many, like, fire safety training videos.
Yeah.
So she was like, I better put a stop to this.
I mean, those stands are made of wood as far
as we
know.
They are made of wood. And we've all seen that video. Probably none of you have seen that video. There's a video where you see a football stadium go up in flames. Hermione was like, yeah, I don't want that to happen to my friends.
No. So what's my next thing? Oh, then they're down at Hagrid's after the game.
Wait, hold on. Harry catches the snitch,
oh,
right?
Oh, shit, that's important, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't write that down, but I was thinking, what else? There's something must happen after that. Yeah, so he catches the snitch with his mouth.
Yeah.
And he swallows it.
Nearly swallows it.
Nearly swallows it.
He doesn't swallow it.
He doesn't swallow it. He nearly swallows it. It comes back up.
He spits instead.
Yeah, he spits it out. Spits out that golden ball. And everyone's like, fucking hell.
Again, paraphrasing.
He wins the game, but that's a very important thing for book 7. So we're touching it then.
Yeah, because he caught it in his mouth. We'll revisit that then. Then they're down in Hagrid's.
Are they?
Well, they're interacting with Hagrid somehow.
My next note is about the dungeons. So were they at Hagrid's after, like directly after the Quidditch match?
Oh, I don't know. When were they in the dungeons? It's almost like it was been longer than 24 hours since.
Mine literally was 24 hours ago.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, we're terrible at this. They have a lesson with the Slytherins. It's potions. They have potions with the Slytherins in the dungeons.
Oh, yeah. And Malfoy keeps trying to make fun of Harry about comparing him to a bullfrog or whatever because he almost swallowed the snitch, but no one finds it funny because everyone's impressed, so he just goes back to taunting him about having no family.
Malfoy's so savage. Like, my God. That's so harsh.
I know. He's fucking brutal.
Yeah. So they're all freezing. And they can see their breath in the potions dungeon. And I did put, why don't they have magic central heating?
I'm sure that would be easy enough to concoct.
Yeah, there must be like a hot spell.
Yeah.
And that sort of, that just bothered me because that's unnecessary suffering.
Yeah, but you know, there's a lot of that in Hogwarts.
I guess so.
When you're at school.
Gives them character, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. When you're at an old timely boarding school in the 1940s, you suffer whatever temperature the classroom's at.
There's no double glazing because that's a muggle thing. They've just got chilly windows. We're letting the killie draft. Let's go back. So you're right. They are with Hagrid. That's how that chapter ends. They're with Hagrid and they bring up Fluffy.
Yeah.
And they say, so what is Fluffy guarding? Because we saw a hatch or something. Yeah. Something like that.
This is after the potions lesson, isn't it?
No, this is before that. So, and then Hagrid goes, look, that's got nothing to do with you. Whatever's in that hatch is between Dumbledore and Nicholas Flamel.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, I shouldn't have told you that. And then they're like, what? Who's Nicholas Flamel? And he won't say anything. That's a massive slip up on Hagrid's part. The fact he said both his first and last name when mentioning Nicholas Flamel. He did that intentionally.
I actually came up with a theory at this point because I thought, why does Dumbledore trust this fucking oaf with clearly very sensitive information, knowing that he's prone to bouts of fucking oafism and just blurting things out? Maybe it's a mechanism by which to give Harry certain information because he knows Harry's going to need to build up his adventuring stats.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that would make sense. I mean, maybe. That is something that Dumbledore would do.
Yeah, but just convoluted and unnecessary.
I don't know, though, if at this point Dumbledore would be thinking that. He definitely would be thinking that way later. I don't necessarily know if he would be thinking like that right now. I think Dumbledore maybe just trusts Hagrid more than he should.
Yeah.
And he doesn't socialise with Hagrid, so maybe he doesn't realise how much Hagrid, like, blurts out. Because Hagrid has obviously proven his, like, loyalty and stuff through the various things. Maybe he thinks Hagrid's just safe.
Yeah.
He doesn't realise that when Hagrid...
Safe.
Yeah, he's safe, lad.
Yeah. Maybe he thinks Hagrid is like urbane and erudite.
Oh my God, yeah. Well, yeah, because he did save him from getting expelled.
Yeah.
Even though he should have been expelled.
Well, he was expelled.
That's true. He was expelled. He should have been just killed as well.
Do you know what I thought was a nice touch about something in this scene?
Go on.
When he says, how do you know about Fluffy? Hagrid says, he's mine. I bought him off a Greek chap I met in the pub.
I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Because he's a Cerberus and guards the gates of the underworld in ancient Greece.
That's cool. I wonder if there's more than one in the Wizarding World.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You know what? You know what makes a great podcast? Lots of silence and pondering.
Well, I like other people listening to be thinking as much as we are. Right, so so the next chapter that happens with the potions, and then they're all really curious about who Nicholas Flamel is because he's not in any of the regular books, and so they go to the library to try and find out more, and they sort of think that he might be in the restricted section of the library.
Yeah, I had a point about this. Nicholas Flamel created a stone that can give you infinite life.
Yeah.
That's a big fucking deal.
That's a tome unto itself.
Yeah. He's not in Great Wizards of the 20th Century, Notable Magical Names of Our Time, Important Modern Magical Discoveries, or A Study of Developments in Wizardry. What the fuck? It's painted as if the Philosopher's Stone is this tiny inconsequential thing. But it's fucking... It's
maybe
immortality.
Maybe no one knows about it or him, though.
That's the only explanation, I think. That it's been kept so secret.
Because to be fair, if I was Nicholas Flamel, I probably would keep it secret.
Yeah. I mean, it's on the chocolate frog card.
Nicholas Flamel.
Yeah, that's where Harry's read it before and why he knows the name.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that makes no sense then.
Well, it just says on the Albus Dumbledore chocolate frog card, says is famous for his defeat of the dark wizard Grindelwald and for his work in alchemy with his partner Nicholas Flamel. It doesn't mention the Philosopher's Stone, but it says Dumbledore's work on alchemy with Nicholas Flamel.
So Nicholas Flamel, for it to be on the chocolate frog card, it must be quite significant work.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense that he's not in any of the books. He's definitely a big deal.
Huh, curious that and curiouser. Okay, I did put that the restricted books must be quite awesome.
Yeah.
Because the way that they were saying that you can only get access to them if you're doing any WTs and you would be studying them for Defense Against the Dark Arts exams, because they're all like dark magic books. I was like, that must be pretty rad to like read through them.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, and that was quite exciting, I thought. But also quite deadly to keep them in. Yeah, it's a restricted section, but you've just got to open the door when no one's around to get in there. It's not like difficult to access them. I did think that was a bit like not very smart.
Yeah, I guess so. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, it would be hard to get there without, although apparently it's not that hard to creep around at night.
Yeah,
without being caught, because they've done it once. From now on, Harry has the invisibility cloak, which we'll come to in a minute, but even before he had that, they did it.
Yeah, and it's like, as long as you went into, if you were kind of following Filch, so that when he passed the place that you need to go to, then you head into it, it would be fine. There's no like magical alarm system.
No.
It was only Mrs. Norris if she happens to be around. I don't know. Maybe that just says more about me that I would have been like, I'm so fucking going to the restricted section.
Yeah.
Alas.
Earwax.
So, Christmas Day comes around. The Weasleys are staying at Hogwarts because Mum and Dad are going to visit Charlie in Romania.
Yeah.
Or is it Bill? No, it's Charlie. Charlie's the dragon tamer.
Yeah.
Dragon tamer? Dragon...
person.
Yeah, dragon vet.
He's the dragon, yeah.
He's the dragon guy.
He's the dragon dude.
And I was like, oh, okay, they must have been saving for that for quite a while then.
Probably, although did they not just like floop out of there?
I don't think you can do it internationally.
No?
I don't think so. Because think about, they save up all, they have to use the money from Arthur's win at work to
when
go
they go
visit.
To Egypt.
Yeah.
So how do wizards travel internationally then?
That's a good point. I guess maybe they can then.
Do you know what? I reckon there's probably, because we don't really see, Harry doesn't go to any other countries.
No, but Voldemort does.
Voldemort does. Voldemort just flies. Voldemort don't give a fuck about the law. So like, I reckon there's some magical portal system, international portal system, that you have to go and check in and get your paperwork seen by a ministry official or whatever, like an airport.
I guess so, yeah.
But we don't see that, but I reckon that, you know, if we were to ask old Joanne about it.
that's her name, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's Jemima or Jalfrezzi. Anyway. Right, so it's Christmas Day.
Yeah.
They all wake up. Harry wasn't expecting anything. I did put why, but the Dursleys gave him 50p.
Sellotape to a note.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like, why?
I thought, why did the Dursleys bother sending him in? It costs more to send that than they did include in it. Do you know what I mean?
And how did they send it? Did they send it with an owl? I fucking doubt it.
No, there's wizards working in the Muggle postal system. So if you address anything to Hogwarts, that will be put in front of the wizards who work in the post office, and they'll sort it out.
Okay.
Because that's how the Hogwarts letters get to Muggleborns. Right, so they open up their prezzies. Harry gets 50p.
Yep.
Ron gets a jumper. Harry gets a jumper. an emerald green jumper, I might add.
Does it say that?
Yeah. And I was like, and I wrote it down. I was like, there we go again. Yeah, Ron has one. Ron gets some Bertie Bots from Hermione. Harry gets chocolate frogs. I was like, Harry definitely got the better like lot.
Yeah.
Hagrid gets him a flute that he whittled himself.
Yeah. After Hagrid knows that they know about Fluffy.
Oh my God, yeah.
And Hagrid knows what needs to be done. He gives them the means by which to do it.
I reckon because they'd spoken about it, that it was just like on his mind subconsciously. So when he's like, I wonder what I can get Harry, the flute was just there. And he was like, I bet he'd like a flute.
Yeah, maybe.
Not even thinking about what he was actually doing.
If Hagrid has the capability of whittling a functioning flute, he must be a musician.
I feel like flute is a very sort of like that kind of flute. It's a very like Robin Hood type.
Very loose term for what it actually is.
Yeah, I think like it's probably something his dad taught him.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, yeah, just take a twig, poke some holes in it and blow into it. That'll keep you happy for the next 5 years, right?
And he's like, oh, thanks, yeah. Dad.
Well, I go off and find some more giants to fulfill my fetish.
Yeah, to climb inside.
Yeah.
God.
I really like cheeky chess pieces. I thought that was a nice little touch.
What? Oh, maybe they were playing it on, like, why would they play it before they opened their presents? Maybe on Christmas Eve they were playing chess.
Yeah.
I think it's on Christmas Eve they're playing
Harry
chess.
Harry borrows a set from Seamus or something.
Yeah.
And they don't trust him at all. And they're all like, what? Don't send me there. Send him.
I do think that was kind of cool. And also, like, a bit scary. These, like, little men with swords that can talk.
Yeah.
And potentially kill me in my sleep. I was just like,
but,
I don't know.
Yeah. But I feel like they would be, because to create a little like fully sentient being would be like a ridiculous level magic.
Yeah.
I feel like they must be restricted to chess functions.
I guess so. Yeah. Maybe they only become animate when they're on the board.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go with that.
Let's
I like
go with
that,
that. Just to let us feel safe at night. And I got, as for the presents, Ron's parents give him corned beef sandwiches. And Ron sit on the train on the way to Hogwarts 3 chapters back. He says, I hate corned beef and I always tell them and they always forget. He opens his maroon jumper and says, every year mine's maroon and I hate maroon. I think Ron's parents hate him.
I think they do too. I think he's got like, what's it's called middle child syndrome. So he's always feeling that thing of being like the forgotten one and being the one that's left out. So I reckon that Fred and George probably went like, no, Fred likes that colour and I like this colour and she never forgets. But because Ron's the one slap bang in the middle, even though he's not, he's actually second from last.
Yeah.
So he's not in the middle. But maybe because the other two boys, I guess in terms of everyone who's living at home, he kind of is in the middle.
He's the most like nondescript one.
Yeah, I think, yeah, he's because Percy's the brainy one. The twins are like the troublesome twosome. Ginny's obviously the youngest. The other boy works in the bank. The other one's a dragon trainer.
Yeah, they've gone off and made their own thing.
Ron's sort of a bit
of the ones that are still at school. Percy's the smart, you know, prefect, progeny, whatever.
Mm.
The twins are the twins. They're their own.
They're cool.
They're cool dudes. and Ron's just a kid, like, doesn't know where he fits in.
Yeah. He's overshadowed by everyone in that household, basically. I think that's why the mum forgets him.
Which, interestingly, comes up later in this chapter.
Maybe that's why it's in my mind.
Yeah.
Just like Hagrid's flute.
Christmas dinner. Hammer right. How many students do you reckon stay behind for Christmas?
5.
Total throughout the school?
Maybe like 7.
And how many teachers do you reckon there are?
How many of them.
Like people total do you reckon there are having Christmas lunch in the Great Hall?
I'll say about 20.
100 roast turkeys. Platters of like pigs in blankets. What the how many? What?
Maybe once they've eaten to their fill, they just go like vomitous and then just carry on again.
Yeah, like the Roman emperors or whatever. Live mice in the crackers.
I had a real big problem with this because you can't magic food because he said that would have been Mrs. Norris's Christmas dinner.
Yeah.
Surely it should be that when she bit into those mice, if she did, they would just like turn into magic.
Yeah, like leprechaun gold.
Yes.
Like that. Because it seems like the mice did just poof into existence when the crackers are banged, rather than there being actual mice inside the crackers that then just run out when you... That's terrifying.
That's inhumane.
Yeah, that's awful if that's the case. But it's definitely like the mice just a pit. But you can't create animals because all animals are food for something.
No, but you can because Hermione magics birds in book 6.
Yeah, yeah. So you, but yeah, you would, again, you would imagine that at some point they're going to disappear back into the ether.
So I think that, I think this is before she'd thought about any of that sort
and
of thing.
And to be fair, Harry doesn't necessarily know that yet. And so if we're Harry's and he says, you know, Harry had a suspicion that they would become Mrs. Norris's dinner later. Yeah. He doesn't have any reason not to suspect that, I suppose.
That is true. Going back, because we've completely skipped over the cloak.
Oh, yeah. Have we? We're still, we're still on Christmas dinner. They haven't, or did they open their presents in the morning?
They opened their presents in the morning.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Right, so the cloak sounds rad, I put.
Yes.
I put the Dumbledore's note was unnecessarily tactless. He said, so, yeah, so your father left this with me before he died. I thought I should return it to you. And I was just like, you don't want to be reminded that your dad died on Christmas. You could just say, oh, your father left this with me. I thought I should return it to you. And I thought that would have been what a normal feeling person would write. You know what
rather
I mean?
Dumbledore, the
machine. You wouldn't say, yeah, so your dad left this with me before he died, full stop. And they're not even sign it off. You're like, yeah, he fucking knows who wrote this and send it off.
Though Dumbledore and Harry haven't had any direct interaction yet.
At all.
No.
Yes, I put, why wouldn't he sign it off as Dumbledore? I thought that was weird. And then I had a just interesting question of what would you do if you had the cloak?
Oh, man.
Going in the girls' changing room.
Oh, God, I don't know. I feel like I would end up freaking out over, like, contemplating what I would do. Would I go and, like, if I thought people might be talking about me, would I go and listen to what they were saying?
Oh, that's risky.
That's a dangerous game, but would you be able to resist?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I know what mental anguish it would, like, cause me. I'd be like, I'd rather not, thanks. So I'm not that person who ever wants to know what people are saying about them behind their back. I'm quite happy just to live in ignorance.
Yeah, this is the thing. I sort of kind of do want to know.
Oh, why would you do
but,
that yourself?
But I also know that it's no good can come of it.
Yeah, ever.
So, yeah.
I just thought I would go and raid Honeydukes.
Become a thief.
Yeah. Don't make it sound like that. A sweet thief.
A sweet thief. As in, like, a thief who steals sweets or just a really kind person, but who also will nick your shit.
I take your things with a smile and a wink.
Yeah, God, no, I feel like there must be some good you could do with it, something awesome you could do, but it's amazing to me now that I haven't considered what I would do with an invisibility cloak. How have I not considered that?
Yeah, that's like the first thing I thought of when I read it the first time, or when I saw it. I was like, oh, what would I do with that?
What would I do with that? Because it's completely, you're in a completely different setting to the one Harry's in. We're not at wizard school. We're in the real world.
Yeah.
What would I do? I don't know, have a safe walk from my flat to the station?
To be fair, that is a good enough use of it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then just freak everyone out in the middle of Brixton Station by just appearing.
Yeah, or like anything that you could do that would be like scary is kind of like assaulty.
Yeah, this is it. There's so, you very quickly get close to the lines of being assaulty and being thiefy.
I think it would corrupt most people.
Yeah.
I think being it's what happened in that film Hollow Man. He was like a nice guy, then he got made invisible. And because he's got no repercussions, his like bad tendencies just start to manifest more and more and more. I think that would happen to a lot of people.
Not Harry, though.
Not Harry, because he's the saviour. Just like Jesus. Hogwarts dinner is very... I loved that McGonagall was a bit drunk.
Yeah.
That really, like, that warmed my heart a little bit. I was like, I bet she was so well up for it.
With Hagrid.
I mean...
Opposite end of the spectrum to Flitwick.
Yeah. And it reminds her of back home, you know, on the moors in Scotland. She's like, love a bit of rough and tumble.
You know, over the... I was at a wedding a couple of days ago, and I discovered on the train that a second character name from Harry Potter that's named after a train station.
What?
Runcorn.
Really?
Yeah.
Ah.
It's a station near Liverpool.
I think I've heard of that before, but I've not put two and two together.
Do you know where the other one is?
No.
Flitwick.
I was at a station. Where?
It's my home state. It's closest station to where I'm from.
No way.
Yeah, but it's not pronounced Flitwick. It's pronounced Flitwick.
Ah.
The W silent like Chiswick or Greenwich.
Wow. See, she takes so many fucking liberties. Yeah, I put Americans don't have crackers. I've heard before that a lot of them were like, I didn't know what that meant. They were pulling a cracker.
Really?
Yeah.
They don't have Christmas crackers?
No.
America! What?
Yeah, weird, right?
That is weird. Yeah. I guess I've just never... In all the American Christmas films, there's just never a bit where they pull crackers.
There are other Christmas traditions that we have that they don't have as well. But that one I definitely know for sure. But I would be curious to find out what the others are.
Yeah. And if they have any we don't have.
Right, we've got 5 minutes to cover probably the most awesome part of the book so far.
Okay, Harry puts his invisibility cloak on, runs to the restricted section in the library to try and find out Nicholas Flamel.
Opens that scary book.
The screaming book is fucking terrifying.
Yeah, that really scared me.
Yeah, that's like, a very cool indication of how intense the restricted section is.
How intense it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then, you know, runs away from it, running away from Filch, discovers, is it the room of requirement?
No, it's just a storage room.
Oh.
And, yeah, he stumbles across the Mirror of Erised.
Mirror of Erised.
Of desire. But backwards. I thought the mirror was really heartbreaking, actually. I felt thinking of him, more heartbreaking than it is in the films, seeing that he saw his whole family that he's never got to know, that really sort of like touched me. And I was like, I can imagine like, you know, that feeling. Yeah, and I was also curious as to what would you see in it?
Oh, shit.
That's such like a deep question.
See myself with a thick pair of socks.
Yeah, I'd see myself with an alibi.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Just with some security and stability. That's all I really want.
Yeah. I think mine would be an Oscar and like a wedding ring, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like to be married to a good man and have a good film career.
Decent.
Yeah. Decent.
I mean, that would be sweet.
Yeah. Oh, well, guys, email us and tell us what your desires would be.
Yeah.
Please, nothing incriminating unless it's sexy.
And then I guess my initial thought on, because Harry then brings Ron to the mirror the next night, my initial thought was that Ron's deepest desires are a bit tragic, but like I guess they're understandable, but like
I think
can't dream any bigger than being head boy and Quidditch captain.
I think that's only as far as he can see.
Yeah, maybe.
I think he's very much that kind of boy. He just hasn't really ever pondered his like actual future. I think he's pretty much sort of like a, yeah, I suppose so kind of boy. So I think that is his biggest things for now. I bet it would change every year that he looked into it.
Yeah, probably.
But, whereas I think Harry's would stay the same for the rest of his life. Yeah, so Harry comes back to find the mirror again and it's gone, but Dumbledore's in the room.
No, it's there. The mirror's still there.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. He goes to the mirror, sees his family, and then he hears, back again, Harry.
Oh, shit. I thought he was gone.
Harry says he must have been so transfixed in his eagerness to get to the mirror that he didn't even notice Dumbledore standing behind him.
Yeah, I wonder why Dumbledore... I guess Dumbledore was probably there for the same reason Harry was, then saw Harry and was like, ah. Oh. Then how did he know that Harry was there the first time?
I think it's one of those Dumbledore just knows things. Yeah. I think he knows... He's one of those grand old mysterious wizards that just knows everything that goes on.
I know that he doesn't need an invisibility cloak to become invisible.
He says as much.
Yeah. Oh, does he?
In this bit, yeah.
Wow, that's probably where I got it from, guys. So yeah, I think he probably just wanders around the school at night and probably saw Harry. I was like, oh.
Yeah, and I think he has, like, the Marauder's Map was made by a bunch of students. He has his own ways of knowing everything that's going on in the castle at all times.
Yeah,
and has his own kind of discretion about when he steps in and enforces rules and stuff.
I guess so. Yeah, I thought his advice was really solid, Harry, when he said it doesn't do well to dwell on dreams and forget to live.
Yeah.
I thought that was like, yes, pretty good advice for everyone, I think.
It is. Although his explanation, when Harry wants to try and explain how the mirror works, it says, the happiest man in the world would look into the mirror and see himself exactly as he is.
Hmm.
I thought it was kind of a dumb, roundabout way of explaining what it does. Even the happiest man in the world would desire something.
Yeah, I feel like Dumbledore just, I feel like he doesn't get often, I feel like he just loves waxing poetic, you know?
Yeah, it's like, he does. He loves teasing you with bits of information and making you figure things out for yourself.
Yeah, he's such a wanker.
I've got to say, I don't quite share your hatred of Dumbledore. I quite like him.
We'll see how your feelings change as we go on.
Yeah, that's true.
Once you're reminded of everything he does, you'll be like, yeah, do you know what? This guy's a fucking sadist. so Harry asks Dumbledore what he sees, and Dumbledore says, I see myself holding a pair of big fluffy socks.
Something like that.
And Harry's like, Harry says he doesn't think that Dumbledore was telling him the truth. But that's another, like, the way it's phrased, it's another, like, omniscient phrasing of that.
I don't know. It's still what Harry's thinking.
But it's the same. Okay, let's not get into this. We ain't got the time.
yeah, he says, so Harry thought that Dumbledore was maybe not being entirely honest with him, but yeah. then he supposed that it was a bit of a personal question.
Yeah, so it turns out that Dumbledore actually saw Ariana alive still in the mirror.
Oh. Yeah.
Either that or just, I don't know, a bunch of like strippers jerking off all over him, right? Oh, to be young again.
We all know that's how Dumbledore spent his youth. Yeah. Yeah, so for those who aren't like totally au fait with the Potter verse, Ariana was Dumbledore's younger sister.
Yeah, she got killed in a battle between him and Grindelwald, and it was one of it was Dumbledore's biggest like regret and biggest source of guilt.
There we go.
Yeah. So that brings us to the end of chapter 12 and the end of this episode of Poorly Read.
Indeed. Yeah, hook us up on all the social media. That's not the phrase, is it?
Hit us up.
Hey. On Twitter and Instagram at Poorly Read Pod, or you can email us at poorlyread@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on anything we've said. Tell us why we're idiots if you want.
Yes, I'm looking forward to hearing the corrections on to things.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you know what? I will say this, you can send them at any time. So even if you're listening to this podcast months after an episode has been released, don't be afraid to get on your high horse and send us exactly what you think.
Yeah, and we will read them.
Yeah, we will read them out loud on the pod, and we'll say your name and bring you eternal glory. Right, so this has been Gifton.
And I'm Tom.
And Hagrid's Hagrid.
We're sticking with that.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Oh, okay. Gosh. That's that. Bye-bye.
Bye.